This is West Southwest on WMUK. I'm Arlene McMichael. Most students who go away to college are starting their support network all over again at a time that they're also having to live on their own for the first time. And for some, that can lead to depression, even suicide. That's why Western Michigan University Lee Honors College is showing a newly released documentary about suicide. It's called The S Word. The screening is on February 7th. I recently interviewed Lisa Klein, the film's director.
Well, thank you for joining us here on WMUK.
Absolutely.
Where have you been showing it, The S Word?
We have been doing an unusual route because oftentimes with independent films, you start at festivals and then go from there. We're sort of doing everything simultaneously. I'm from Detroit, so we've been back to Detroit a couple of times. We've shown it at University of Michigan. We showed it in Royal Oak. We showed it at MIT. We've been all over. And then a couple of screenings in Canada as well.
What are the stories that we will hear?
Basically, you will hear a lot from actual attempt survivors, people who have attempted to take their lives and survived. And really what our focus is, I mean, I approach this as somebody who lost loved ones to suicide. But what I found, this thriving community of people who had attempted to take their lives, survived, and were basically turning their pain into purpose. So, for example, you'll see Desiree Stage. And she is a photographer. She had attempted to take her life and was on the internet looking for people like her, looking for other people who were struggling with suicidal thoughts, and really didn't find a lot. She found groups of people who had lost people. And so she decided to go out and, as a photographer, to photograph other attempt survivors and tell their stories. And, you know, interview them. And the purpose of this, I mean, the portraits that she took was sort of look into my lens, look into my eyes, because we always look away. Oftentimes, there's the shame and the fear of actually engaging with them. She decided to turn that around. So basically, with these people, I mean, I can tell you who they are and all of that, but it really is about the three-dimensionality of the people in the film and just people in general. So you're not identified with one thing. You're not identified as somebody who attempted suicide. You're not identified that you're, you know, a spelunker and that's all you do in your life. So it really is about showing every, you know, showing the whole person. And so Desiree is one of them. We also have Kalechi, who has she had attempted when she was 23, and she's, you know, she's still struggling. And that's another thing that was really important for us, to show that many people who are dealing with suicidal thoughts, suicidal ideation, people who have attempted suicide, it isn't like it goes away. It isn't like, okay, I'm fine now. Yeah, I attempted suicide and I'm okay, or I'm dealing with depression, but I'm fine. It's about coping mechanisms and how they're going on from here. And also, what was important for me is when you're dealing with a topic like suicide, it isn't like everybody attempts suicide and survives. There are people, unfortunately, who don't. And we have a family of Brandon. We have his mother, father, and sister who actually took his own life a few years ago. And we talked to the family as well.
Now, I just want to, for a moment, address the significance of this type of film in terms of the topic of suicide, that you're doing first-person narratives, that often that this wasn't something that was readily available.
Oh, no. And it was sort of serendipitous that when we started filming, there was this rise where people were starting to listen because there was such fear around this before, like getting people together who had attempted. Leah Harris in the film said at one point, she said, you know, they were afraid to put us in a room together, like we would exchange suicide recipes or something. And it's so not true. It's like when you get these people together and they're talking, value in that
in my family. I lost both my father and my brother to suicide. Emotionally, I think that I did feel like, wow, you know, through these people, there are things that I'm gonna learn in terms of how they were feeling and what they were thinking when they were on the edge. And I feel like there's so much value in that for people who are struggling to see, whether it's the inspiration or hope, but I mean, that really is what it is. I mean, you know, you have somebody like Craig who said, I was done. It was over for me. And I was wrong. You know, so it isn't like he's preaching. It isn't like he's saying, yeah, if I can do it, you can do it. He's just telling his story. He's telling us where he was and where he is now. And there's just a lot to be gained from that, I think.
Who is the audience for this film?
Not to sound too grandiose, but everyone. There are people who think that they don't know anybody or don't know anything. But then I hear about 10-year-olds, 11-year-olds, 12-year-olds who took their own lives. So once you reach a certain age, you know somebody, or you know somebody who knows somebody. And whether it's feeling enabled, feeling empowered to listen to somebody, because people feel like often, wow, you know, if somebody talks to me about their struggles or talks to me about suicide, I better call 911. You know, I better have them, you know, talk to a psychiatrist. Not necessarily, because we all have that power. We all have the power to listen, for sure. So it really is for everyone in terms of feeling less alone yourself, if you yourself have struggled, if you know somebody who is, or knowing the risk factors and the warning signs and all of that. We want it to not be the 10th leading cause of death and the second leading cause of death for 10 to 24-year-olds.
What are the main causes of suicide?
That is such a tough question. So many people feel like it's pretty clear cut, it's mental illness. But no, because we're so complex that the causes, the reasons, all the struggles, all of the stuff is so complex. I mean, you have childhood trauma. You have, you know, when you talk about something like the military and it's like 22 veterans a day die by suicide. I talk to veterans. I talk to military psychiatrists. Many, many of the people who have taken their own lives in the military have never seen combat. So it isn't like, oh, my God, you know, they've seen the worst of the worst. There is certainly that. And there's certainly PTSD, and all of that can come into play. But also what you came into it with, whether it was your relationship issues or things that we all deal with.
Have you found that disconnection is a factor in suicide attempts?
Absolutely. And that was the next thing I was going to say, because feeling connected, feeling like you have a community is so huge for all of us. There's a man named, he's a suicidologist, a psychologist named Thomas Joyner, and he wrote a book called Why People Die by Suicide. And his three reasons are hopelessness, feeling like there's no hope and nowhere to go, burdensomeness, and feeling like you're a burden to others, and really there's nobody there for you. And another one, which I thought was really interesting, and the term is lethality, and feeling like you can do it, because it isn't really our instinct to die. You have a survival instinct, as we all do. There is a whole thing about, if you've attempted before, your chances are much greater to actually die by suicide.
You're listening to West Southwest on WMUK. We're talking to Lisa Klein, director of a documentary featuring the personal stories of suicide attempt survivors. The S Word will be shown on February 7th at Chenery Auditorium in Kalamazoo. Something that I'm struck by is, in today's society, you know, we have social media of all kinds of ways that we can connect with each other electronically and so on and so forth, but yet people are lonelier than ever.
Absolutely. I call social media the ultimate double-edged sword, because on social media, something like Live Through This, which is what Desiree does with her photographs and all of that, she has these communities that she's built of people who can talk to each other. And they can, and you have the crisis line that you can call, but you also have a crisis text line. You can be anonymous and all of that. And with that, you can be helped, because if you are somebody who is afraid to, you know, whether it's your job or your family or whatever that's preventing you from talking and going out there, which, again, the silence is generally the worst possible thing you can do, to not be able to talk about it. But if you have a community of people, even if it's on the internet or whatever, then at least you have that But on the other hand, it is a breeding ground for isolation. It is a breeding ground, as we've seen, the whole thing with bullying. I don't want to draw a straight line to you're bullied and then you kill yourself, because it is not that. It's far more complex than that. But when we were bullied back in the day when you were on the, you know, recess and somebody was bullying you, you could go home and have a safe haven. There's no safe haven anymore, because it's there 24/7 and, you know, it's loud. The thing about the internet is it's here and we can't put Pandora back in the box. So I think part of our work in suicide prevention is figuring out it's one more tool.
What tools have been effective in keeping people alive?
One is a huge one is connection. Connection is huge. And some people, you know, therapy can help, meditation. Everybody, again, is so different. And there are people who are averse to therapy and they're averse to medication. They don't want to do it. I would to say averse to therapy is because finding a therapist, it's almost like dating, you know, because, you know, there are people who are like, well, I can't go to somebody because they didn't listen to me, or they were horrible or whatever. It could take a while, just like it could take a while to find the right medication, or it's possible the medication isn't for you. We talk to a lot of experts. It isn't that one thing is a panacea. Generally, it's, you know, five things or eight things or three, you know, whatever the combination is that works for you, because we're all so different. Also, a huge thing is understanding that it's okay to not be okay, because so many of us feel like, oh, my God, if I'm feeling, you know, depressed, or if somebody's feeling a certain way, then there's the shame in that, like, oh, my God, I'm not okay. And it's not okay to not be okay. But it is, and figuring out how you're going to best cope with not being okay, not necessarily getting to the point of, okay, I'm going to take this pill and then I'm going to be okay. It's figuring out, okay, what am I going to do today to get through today? Because I, you know, I need to get to this point and I need to be safe.
You were talking about how you've shown the film at a lot of universities. I thought I read somewhere that mental illness sometimes can manifest around the age that students start college.
Absolutely. And what's important to us is finding out what is available on campus. Are there people available to talk to? So knowing if there's a peer group on your campus, if you know, counseling and all of that, because it is such a vulnerable age, because you're leaving home for the first time and you're in a new environment. Oftentimes people go to college and don't know anybody. So it really is finding your people, finding your peers, finding the people who are going to be there for you, because your parents aren't there generally. But again, you're in this new environment, and being able to talk to your teachers if things are too difficult. And if you isolate and decide that you're going to get through this and you're going to be okay and you're going to study for this test and you're going to stay up all night and you're going to take whatever you need to take, it's probably not going to end well. Like, I feel like part of orientation, there's got to be, you know, it's like, okay, now you know where the student union is, you know where this is, you know where this is, you know where your advisor is, you know where your peer groups are, you know your support groups, all of that. It should all be woven in, because it isn't this or that. It's this and that.
Lastly, there's an online resource I noticed on the S-Word website. It's called 13 Reasons Why Not, short videos of suicide attempt survivors who are thanking people who were instrumental in keeping them alive. Can you talk a little bit about that?
It started in Oxford, Michigan, actually. And so there was this show, 13 Reasons Why.
I'm sorry, is this project affiliated with you all or no?
It's not affiliated with us. I do think what they're doing is incredible. They were not happy with 13 Reasons Why. It was a TV series about a high school student who took her own life, and she made a tape for everybody who she felt wronged her. So what this group of high school students did was they turned that upside down, and they said, for example, you know, Sarah, you sat up with me all night and you listened to me. You listened to me and you were there for me. Sarah, you're one of the reasons why not. You're one of the reasons why I did not kill myself. So when I talk about having groups on campus, it's whatever works for this particular group. I mean, having people who can get together, not necessarily just online, but people who can actually connect with each other, because you're all in this together.
Ms. Klein, thank you so much for your time and much success with your project.
Thank you. Thank you so much for letting me do this.
A free screening of the S-Word documentary is planned for 7 p.m. Wednesday, February 7th, at Chenery Auditorium in Kalamazoo. It'll be followed by a discussion with Lisa Klein, who directed the film. For resources and more information about this event that Western Michigan University Lee Honors College is sponsoring, go to wmuk.org. For West Southwest on WMUK, I'm Arlene McMichael.